Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, friends, welcome to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Dave Kistler along with Gary Dahl. Sam Rohrer is away today, but we have a power-packed program for you today. This is the day for which many people voted, and some registered and voted for the first time just to get to this day. What am I talking about? Well, this evening at 8 o'clock, prime time, the next Supreme Court Justice of the United States will be announced as far as the nominee, and then what happens from there in the confirmation process, of course, remains to be seen. But Donald Trump is doing it upright. It'll be a primetime White House announcement, and it has all the earmarks of a grand and glorious occasion. And again, a lot of people registered to vote just for this. So this is a critical, vitally important day. Also, friends, President Barack Obama, former President Barack Obama, waited about 10 days, and that's about all he could resist before he had to make a comment about what President Trump has done. And yesterday, through a spokesman named Kevin Lewis, our former president said this, or Kevin Lewis said this with respect to the president fundamentally disagrees with the notion of discriminating against individuals because of their faith or religion. And friends, there again, that is a classic example of fake news, fake reporting. This is not discrimination against anyone based on their faith or their religion. What President Trump did with respect to this immigration suspension and refugee suspension for 120 days from seven countries that are known to be jihadist hotbeds is not discrimination on the basis of religion or faith. So again, that is a total misnomer. But we're going to be talking a little bit more about that. And more specifically, we're going to be talking about what's going to take place tonight in segment one. But in segments two and three, we've got two special guests on today that we'll be introducing momentarily to be talking about the declining influence of parents' rights in America. In fact, it is a phenomenally disturbing trend. In fact, friends, it's been going on for a long time, but it's reaching new heights in the United States of America, and its application is broad. And you're not going to want to miss this discussion in segments two and three. And then in segment four, we're going to talk a little bit about what Donald Trump did yesterday with the firing of the acting attorney general because she refused to defend his immigration executive order in court. Wow. Phenomenal day of news yesterday. We're going to be getting into all of that momentarily. But Gary, I want to go to this first and foremost. Today, again, is the day that most Christians and conservatives have been waiting for. And right now, it appears that there are three people still as potential picks that the president may mention tonight. And two of them are Ivy League trained. One is not. Two are federal appeals court judges. One is not. And the three names are these: Neil Gorsuch of Colorado, William Pryor of Alabama, and Thomas Hardiman of your state, Gary, Pennsylvania. And Jay Sekulow, the chief counsel for the American Center of Law and Justice, said that fierce Democratic opposition to any nominee, no matter which of the three this is, could prompt Republicans who control the Senate to change the rules to require only a simple majority vote to confirm the next Supreme Court justice. And Democrats, if you'll remember, friends, did that for lower court judges when they were in power. And Republicans now may turn the favor. But Mr. Sekulow predicted that Mr. Trump's nominee in the end would be confirmed no matter what. Now, let me just read one other statement, Gary, before I get some comments from you. Brad Woodhouse, who is a Democratic operative and veteran of many past Supreme Court battles, said this, quote, "This is a Supreme Court seat that was stolen from the previous president." And, of course, the reason he said that is because Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland. And, of course, that nomination absolutely went nowhere. It was stalled in the Senate. And hopefully, back then, not knowing the outcome of the election, the hopes were that there would be a Republican victory, which there has been, and then that the Republican president would be able to nominate the next high court justice, which is what is going to take place this evening. Now, Gary, any thoughts on your part on these three finalists? From what I'm hearing, Gary, the order of likelihood for Trump to pick them is in this order. Gorsuch is number one, Hardiman's number two, and Bill Pryor would be third on the list. But any ideas or any thoughts about them?
Well, Dave, as I've been watching this morning, it seems like Pryor is probably a very distant third at this particular point in time, at least from the news items I've been watching. And
that's what I've been hearing as well, Gary. Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gorsuch and Hardiman are, basically neck and neck. I don't know that I have one with a higher view than the other over the other. I'm not sure. My concern is that anybody who is nominated to the Supreme Court is an originalist, and I think, from what I understand, that both Gorsuch and Hardiman are. And one of the things that encourages me, David, is that Donald Trump is doing this right out of the chute, as it were, and he is trying to put somebody on that court who truly is a strict constitutionalist. And who believes in the Constitution. I don't know if you remember back during the days of the debate, Hillary Clinton was asked basically what kind of a Supreme Court justice would she nominate. And she said that she would nominate somebody who reflects all of the attitudes and the personages of the American citizenry. And that was the wrong answer. The right answer is one who is a strict constitutionalist and originalist who does what he can to interpret the law according to original intent. And from what I can understand, both Gorsuch and Hardiman are individuals of that particular nature. Something else, David, I was thinking about this morning. I know there's no actual litmus test put in the Constitution other than that a justice understand the Constitution, of course. But, you know, when you read the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our Constitution, and when you read the Constitution, which, of course, along with the Declaration, is the law of the land, there really are three things that a Supreme Court justice should maintain. Number one is the sanctity of life. Number two is the existence of God. And number three, the rights of the people. And I know we don't have time to develop that, but can you see that when you look at the Declaration and when you look at the Constitution, those are three qualifications, I think, for every jurist to support the sanctity of life, the existence of God, and the rights of the American people. Clearly,
Gary, all three are encapsulated in the Declaration of Independence. And so, yeah. Absolutely, if they don't believe those things, I think they would and should be disqualified from consideration from any position on the high court. Here's an interesting thing, and I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about this. Do you know the Constitution does not require that a Supreme Court justice have prior judicial experience?
That's right.
Now, typically they do. And of course, part of the brilliance of the founders to have the Senate advise and consent with respect to this was to make sure that they are people that are eminently qualified. But one of the requirements is not that they have prior judicial experience. Of course, these three all do, and a rich tradition of judicial experience. But Gary, they all do seem to be very strong on life. They all seem to be very strong on First and Second Amendment liberty. There's a couple of questions about Gorsuch on a couple of things that we won't have time to get into today. We'll analyze him more thoroughly if he is the pick. But friends, watch tonight at 8 o'clock as the president makes the announcement there from, I'm sure it's going to be the East Room of the White House. It's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal evening. Well, when we return from the break, we're going to talk about the depletion of parents' rights with respect to their own children and what can be done to reverse this tragic trek. And we have two special guests. They're going to discuss that with us, friends. Powerful, powerful stuff. Don't miss it right after the brief timeout.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
What is government itself but the greatest of all reflections upon human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. A quote from James Madison.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Well, the new session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly is fully engaged, with all the new members sworn in, committee assignments made, and a legislative calendar now underway. Unlike most states, Pennsylvania's General Assembly is a full-time legislature, which means that we have to maintain a high level of alert throughout the year, whether standing up against dangerous and troubling legislation or letting you know about bills that you should consider supporting. It's certainly time-consuming and at times nerve-wracking, too, as we serve as a sentry for you, our friends and constituents, when a bad bill suddenly is set up for a vote. It's at that point you might receive an instant alert from us via email asking you to take action. And when you and others like you across Pennsylvania do take action, the result is awesome. Together, we've stopped some pretty bad proposals and helped good ones across the finish line. Help join the fight by going to our website at pafamily.org to sign up for our e-alerts.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, September 12, 1777.
I'm Beth Ann Mumford, Pennsylvania Director of Americans for Prosperity. Join me every Monday morning at 8 a.m. for the Citizens Bulletin. What you don't know is hurting you. Become an informed, effective, and empowered citizen impacting the important policy issues of the day, right here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, we want to welcome to Stand in the Gap Today as two new guests, Michael Ramey and David Miranda of ParentalRights.org, whose mission it is to protect children by empowering their parents. Michael is the Director of Communications and Research for Parental Rights, and then David is the National Grassroots Director. Gentlemen, welcome to Stand in the Gap Today. Thank you for joining us for the program.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. It's an honor to have you both. And Michael, let me go to you. Can you tell just a little bit to our listening audience about what ParentalRights.org is and what your organization does? And then we want to get into some very specific questions with respect to the loss of parental rights across the United States of America.
Sure. Well, we're a political activist organization working to pass a parental rights amendment to the U.S. Constitution to preserve the traditional right of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children without undue government interference. But we also work at the state level to pass good state laws and to prevent state bills that are introduced that would become law that would harm parents and the family atmosphere and the parent-child relationship. And we're also looking at starting some work at the federal level in terms of federal laws as well.
Michael, let me ask you this. What has led to the current significant erosion of parental rights in the United States, and how does this give the government incredible control over the welfare and education of children?
Well, you know, there's been that push by society for a while now to let the experts be in charge, starting with the public schools and then going into allowing doctors to be in charge of your child's medical decisions and on and on. But where we really hit a snag and really ran into trouble was a 2000 Supreme Court case called Troxell versus Granville, in which the Supreme Court recognized its longstanding precedent that parental rights are a fundamental right in the Constitution, but they did not give it the same level of judicial scrutiny as any other right. Basically, they were reviewing a Washington law as to whether that law was unconstitutional or not. And they were measuring that out and said, well, parental rights are a fundamental right, but that you just have to give parental rights some special weight of consideration. And up until that time, parental rights were given what's called strict scrutiny, which is where only a governmental interest of the highest order that can't be served by some other less intrusive means would suffice to override that right. So so they changed the standard. They changed the rules by which parental rights cases are measured in the courts. And that's where we've really seen a degradation in the last 16, 17 years since that ruling.
Michael and David, it's a delight to have you both with us today. And, of course, I can remember what was it back in the late 70s or early 80s when there was that big discussion on outcome-based education. You guys remember that discussion and how that it would infringe upon the parental rights of families, and that was debated back and forth. And my, oh, my, oh, my, look at where we are today. And parental rights are almost out of the book, as it were, particularly as it relates to a lot of governmental education. But, David, I have a question that I'd like to ask you, and that is this. How does the erosion of parental rights affect families, particularly in a medical setting? And a follow-up question to that would be, how does this affect public education and even homeschoolers?
All right. Well, it's a loaded question. In the medical setting, so many parents today are finding as a result of court decisions and bureaucracies being emboldened, that they have to be careful when they take their children to the doctor, to the emergency department, because one mistake in your statement could cause an investigation to occur from a social services agency. We have seen a number of children taken from their parents that really should not have been taken without abuse or medical neglect, though they've been charged with that, from fit parents. And that's because the tide is turning to professionals knowing what's best for children rather than parents. And the respect of the parents' authority is at a low now. And so that's one of the reasons why we need to have the Parental Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. God gave children to parents and has given parents commandment to teach and to train them up and to bring them up and to nurture them in the issue of the Lord. And so parents have parental rights because God has given them commandment to teach and to train them and to care for them and to love them. Plus, he's given them most parents love their children and want what's best for them. The other part of the question was, what was it? I'm sorry.
Well, basically, how does this affect public education, even to the point of homeschooling?
Yeah. So why don't I let Michael answer that question? Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. Well, the basic thing behind there that we've already mentioned, I mentioned it a moment ago and then Dave already did too, is this idea of allowing the experts to make the decisions and trusting that experts know our children better than we do as parents, which is patently false. No one knows your child better than you as the parent. But especially in public schools, we see that where we're told to just let the teachers teach, let the administrators run the schools, and just trust them. They're the experts. They know what they're doing. And so we see a lot of that, especially with parents no longer being able to go into the courtroom and have a firm footing to stand on of that strict scrutiny protection. Now it's harder and harder for parents to say, wait a minute, this is my child, and I have been entrusted to make these decisions. But even to homeschooling, there was a case that went to the Supreme Court 2 years ago, Remyke versus Holder. in which a German family was seeking asylum in our country because in Germany they had been told that they could not homeschool their children, that they had to send their children to the state schools. They weren't even allowed private school. They had to send their children to the state schools or their children would be taken away. They fled to the United States. They were seeking asylum, and the administration at the time said, no, we're not going to grant them asylum. This right of parents to direct the education of their children is not sufficient. It's not a sufficient human right to grant them asylum. The scary thing is that the Supreme Court upheld the government's argument there that your right to decide whether your child goes to a public school or a private school or a Christian school or whether they're homeschooled, that would not be sufficient to grant you status to be here if you needed to be.
They're basically saying, hey, the right to direct education is not considered. It's not going to be considered. And so they set a precedent that way, and that's not good for parental rights.
You know, gentlemen, this is so timely that we're having this discussion in light of the immigration and refugee situation and President Trump's executive action with respect to that. And here we have an example that you've given, Michael, which is a stunning one, that parents and them wanting to have the right to school their children is not deemed by the United States Supreme Court to be a sufficient motivation to allow them into this country. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable how far we've come. Let me ask you, Michael, this question. I know as a pastor's son and someone who's been in the ministry for going on 33 years, I have heard, I have seen, been intimately involved in a multiplicity of situations where social services have been called in or they've come into a family, and things that absolutely defy one's ability to describe have happened. What type of family, in your experience, is most at risk? Or what types of families, maybe, should I say, is it most at risk for having trouble or problems with social services?
Well, there are really three groups. I've been reading a lot of papers just in the last several months on this particular thing. One is parents in poverty. That if you're poor and you come into the radar, as it were, of social services, they're more likely to take your children away than they are someone who is of the middle class or who might be able to hire a lawyer to defend themselves. So poverty is a big indicator of which families are going to have their children taken away. Now, another group is African Americans. There was a study by the Government Accountability Office just a few years ago where they determined that African-American children are up to 40% more likely to be taken into foster care than the average. And they're 40%, they tend to stay in foster care 40% longer. And the Government Accountability Office, after doing all the studies, they determined that a big factor behind that is simply racial bias. And so, you know, African-American families are targeted more often by Child Protective Services and social services to remove children where another family might simply receive services but keep that family together. And then third group is perhaps the most shocking, and that is parents with disabilities. Depending on the nature of their disability, parents with disabilities will face having to defend their right to parent before CPS, before a judge. Anywhere from 40 to 80% of those parents will have that experience.
Wow. That is an absolutely stunning number, Michael, that you have just mentioned. 40 to 80% if they have a disability. Absolutely amazing. Well, what is the thinking that goes on, you know, within the social services that says, you know, if you have a disability, you're unfit to be a parent?
Well, I'll give you an example. Out of Missouri just a couple of years ago, two parents had their first child. They went to the hospital, they had the child, and then social services came and said, we can't release this baby to them because they're both blind. Well, if they're both blind, they can't see, they can't, you know, so they can't find their baby, they can't take care of their baby, whatever the reasoning was. Now, for you or for me, we might struggle to imagine what it would be like to be blind and have to take care of a child. But those who are blind have amazing, they have systems, they make it work. They are just as able to parent as we are, just as loving.
They are indeed. And Michael, I hate to interrupt you, but hold that thought right there, because when we come back from the break, we're going to continue our discussion with Michael Ramey and David Miranda. We're going to talk about what is the Parent Rights Amendment.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of providence which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly says President Trump's executive orders on immigration and refugees are legal and will be implemented humanely.
This is not a travel ban. This is a temporary pause that allows us to better review the existing refugee and visa vetting system.
Now, even with this ban, the plan, we're told, is to admit 872 refugees this week because of hardship concerns. Senate committees vote to approve President Trump's nominees for Education Secretary and Interior Secretaries. Jeff Sessions' attorney general nomination is being debated by the Senate Judiciary Committee.
He's a man of integrity.
Republican Charles Grassley, Democrat Patrick Leahy questions Senator Sessions' impartiality.
It is the Attorney General of the United States, one who's there for everybody. Everybody in the United States.
Fox News. We report. You decide.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYL.
Here's Minute with the Master, brought to you by Bella Victor.
Today's question is, how can I have peace when everything around me and within me is in turmoil? Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." Yes, Jesus is the source of peace. In John 16:33, Jesus said, "These things I have spoken unto you, that in me you might find peace." Real peace is possible only in Christ. It is not found in others or things around us. And we can enjoy this peace by trusting in Him and not allowing our hearts to be troubled. In Isaiah 26:3, we read, "You will keep in perfect peace all who trust in you, all whose thoughts are fixed on you." Yes, my dear friend, we need to trust Him with what's happening in our life. We need to have our thoughts focused on Him. We should not let our hearts be troubled.
This is A Liberating Truth, brought to you by Bella Victor. For more information, contact Bella at MinuteWithTheMaster.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, we do welcome you back to Stand in the Gap Today. And our special guests today are David Miranda and Michael Ramey of ParentalRights.org. And Michael, I had to interrupt you there just a little bit, which I hated to do going into the break. But you were talking about how parents with disabilities are 40 to 80% more likely to face problems with social services. And you used the illustration of two parents who are blind. And yet, because of their blindness, for years, they've been able to navigate through life with additional sensory capability in the other areas that is escalated because of their blindness. And so they should be able and are able easily to care for a child. But social services sometimes deems them not to be able to do so. I'd love for you to pick up there and just finish your story. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about the Parental Rights Amendment itself.
Well, in that case, the parents were able to fight back. They have lived independently prior to having a baby. They do get around just fine, and they have a good support network. They also have worked out practical ways. I mean, they feed themselves, they take care of themselves, and just adding a baby to that, just as when you or I have our first child, and we're always a bit shell-shocked, never quite ready for it, but at the same time, you adapt and you're able to handle it. And they were too. And so after several months, they were able to get their child back. And in the story, the family's back together and they're doing just fine. And the state just never should have intervened in the first place.
Wow. Wow. Powerful, powerful illustration of how government intrudes into the life of a family and assumes parents do not know the best, but that the specialist, and I love the way you guys have described that, the specialist does. Michael, let me go to you. Talk a little bit about what is the Parental Rights Amendment. Explain what it is. Tell us how long that has been something you guys have been working on. And then, if you would, help our audience understand why we even need such an amendment.
Sure. Well, let me start with the end there first. That court case that I mentioned before from 2000 really undermined the authority of parents by taking away the strict judicial scrutiny of any law that would infringe parental rights. So it's really weakened our position in the courts. But the only way to overturn a Supreme Court decision is either, one, you get the Supreme Court to go back and change their own decision, which is pretty much impossible, or the other is to pass an amendment to change the Constitution so that it no longer says what they said it said. Now it says what we want it to say. So the proposed Parental Rights Amendment will fix the Troxell decision by stating that parental rights are fundamental rights and that they get that strict scrutiny protection. So we've been working on it. We've introduced it back in 2008. So it's been in Congress each of the last, I think, five sessions now. Or four, and then this session will be the fifth. We've had as many as 142 co-sponsors in the House at one point, the difficulty being that they were all Republicans, and so we've been really making a concerted effort to get across the aisle this time, especially with, as I mentioned, minorities, African-Americans, the poor, and parents with disabilities all being so heavily targeted. And those are issues that Democrats tend to take up. So we're trying to persuade them that parental rights falls into that as well. Now, the proposed Parental Rights Amendment is six sections, and they're fairly clear. And the first, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but Section 1 says, the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right. So that establishes and preserves that traditional standard that it's a fundamental right. But, you know, the Troxell Court gave lip service to fundamental right and didn't give it the right standard of protection. So Section 3 of the amendment says, neither the United States nor any state shall infringe these rights without demonstrating that its governmental interest as applied to the person is of the highest order and not otherwise served. That's using the Supreme Court's own words against them, as it were. Because the Supreme Court said that if you want to overcome a fundamental right, you have to show a governmental interest of the highest order that can't be otherwise served. So that is that strict judicial scrutiny that we're looking for. So we spell it out for them. Not just in black and white, but in their own words, so they can't go back and twist its meaning later.
You know,
then section. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your statement there.
Well, Section 4 says that the parental rights guaranteed by this article shall not be denied or abridged on account of disability, and that would be the first time that the rights of parents with disabilities have been protected since a bad eugenics-era Supreme Court case back in 1927.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we are living in a day and age when we have to have a parental rights amendment in our Constitution, when you take into consideration that really parents' rights is one of the unalienable rights that the Declaration of Independence speaks of. And, you know, certainly I think that this is all the result of a war that the government has. Well, they probably haven't actually pronounced war on the family, but is it not true, fellas, that the family, the average family in America today, particularly the Christian family in America, is facing a war against the United States government?
Yes, that's largely true.
The truth is, you know, we have the legal issues with parental rights that are diminishing parental rights, that are watching over families because parents are really in this type of climate that's being created, parents are suspect, you know, so we have to watch over them and make sure because we can't trust them to take care of their children. So there's the legal aspect, the emboldening of the bureaucrats in this issue. But then there's also the truth that we have actually brought this on upon ourselves because we basically have changed the way that we we treat our children, we raise our children. Today, we outsource our children from the time that they're 8 and 10 weeks old. We outsource them for care, for education, for entertainment. We outsource them for everything. And parental influence on children is now down to a minimum, where everyone else, all the professionals, all the media, all the peers, all of them have great influence on children today. And so we need to, in order, the Parental Rights Amendment will protect the right of parents to direct the upbringing, care, and education of their children. And that's not going to fix it all. It's going to give us the strong foundation from which to defend parental rights in the courts. But we also have to implement the second half of the fix and of the solution, and that is to call the heart of the fathers to the children, the heart of the children to their fathers, to have parents realize that this is the most solemn responsibility that we have to bring up the next generation. You see, they are our future, and for us to teach them diligently, to bring them up, like the Bible says, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and as we do that, then we'll implement both parts of the solution, of legal protection, but also exercising parental rights to the fullest. You know, today, one of the cases is Field versus Palmdale School District in 2005, where the federal court said that parental rights stop at the threshold of the school door. And you know, that comes from us not exercising parental rights as we should. So we need to call parents to do that, exercise parental rights to the fullest, and practice parental responsibility to the fullest. And then we get behind this effort to amend the Constitution to protect our rights and the rights of our children's children.
David, what you have been sharing, my friend, is phenomenal, and Michael as well. But what you said earlier, the outsourcing, and I'm going to change it to this, the outsourcing of our offspring. It sounds like a book title, but that is precisely what we have done. We have outsourced from almost day one the responsibility to other people, and then we wonder why a government, an intrusive government, takes control and says that they have the most interest in our children, even above that of the parents. I know we have just about a minute and a half left, so gentlemen, I want to ask one of you to do this. Talk to our listeners and help us, help not just them, but help us understand what is going to be necessary to make this Parental Rights Amendment a reality.
Well, it's going to take everyone that's listening to this program to go to parentalrights.org and learn about the issues, sign up to get the email updates and alerts. That's what's going to tell you when the amendment's back in Congress and when you need to call. Then like us on Facebook, facebook.com/parentalrights.org. The other is watch the movie. We have a movie called Overruled, and you can find it at overruledmovie.com. There you'll learn and share it with others. You can watch it free online. It's 35 minutes long. And then finally, support parentalrights.org with money. If everyone just sent donated online $5 to the Parental Rights Amendment, to the work that's being done to realize the Parental Rights Amendment, if everyone just sent $5, we would actually significantly help this effort to realize the Parental Rights Amendment. We're going to go into Congress here in this Congress, and we're hoping that with your help, everyone signing up, making the necessary phone calls, letting their friends know, we're going to see the Parental Rights Amendment pass in this Congress. We need your help.
Who are some of the leaders of this amendment in Congress right now, Dave?
Go ahead, Michael. You can answer that question.
Yeah, well, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina led the charge last year along with actually John McCain. Was with
really?
On that.
That's interesting.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad to see that they are, but that sort of surprises me, and I'm thankful for that. And
now, I wouldn't want to slight some of the more conservative senators that you might have been expecting.
Right.
There are a number of very conservative senators, actually, who have been on board with us from the beginning, and we can always count on their support. But we're looking for leaders who can also reach across the aisle, because we have to have a two-thirds support in both houses. So,
that's right. You know, it takes two-thirds in both houses, and then it goes as a proposal to the states. And there, 38 states need to approve it with a simple majority in their legislatures. Then it becomes the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And that's why we have state leaders all around the country that are working to realize the Parental Rights Amendment.
Well, David Miranda and Michael Ramey, thank you so much. These gentlemen are with parentalrights.org. Please visit their website and follow the prescription that David gave to help make this amendment a reality. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the program. Excellent, excellent discussion. And friends, when we come back from a brief timeout, we're going to talk about what Donald Trump did yesterday to this acting attorney general who refused to enforce his immigration executive order. What's that all about? Don't miss this.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
A popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. A quote from James Madison.
Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School is an online public school for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Founded in 2004, our mission is to have a school where children can see the world, develop character, promote independence, and become lifelong learners. We teach our students to be leaders, thinkers, and scientists. They are taught to be logical and critical in thinking. Some of our classical teaching methods range from online class lectures to debates to Socratic teaching, which develops the art of speaking and writing. We encourage our students to be well-rounded by participating in sports, the arts, and their communities. Your child can benefit from this style of innovative education. Visit us at palcs.org or call 1-877-725-2785.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Remember, as Christians, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Ephesians 6:12.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, like something out of an episode of his hit TV series, The Apprentice, Donald Trump yesterday said to Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, you're fired. And the reason he did that is because of an escalating crisis for his 10-day-old administration, where she, as acting attorney general, had said that to Justice Department lawyers, you do not have to defend Mr. Trump's orders against legal challenges. And friends, that is precisely what she was filling the position of AG for, was to enforce the law of the land, of which this executive order is one. Gary, I want to get your comments about this. President Trump campaigned on this. President Trump said, you know, we need to have a wall on our southern border. We need to make sure that we take appropriate actions to make sure that our nation is kept safe. And he talked about limiting access to immigrants and refugees coming into the country. And as someone sent me just recently a picture of Donald Trump, and the caption says this: for the first time in the history of civilization, people are angry with a politician because he's keeping his campaign promises. Well, Gary, what our new president is doing is precisely that. He's keeping his campaign promises, and some people, not near as many as the media is trying to convince us that are angry, not many as many at all. But Gary, I think what he did yesterday was stellar. What about you?
Well, I agree. And, you know, the poor guy, and I'm certain that he will do things that you and I will not agree upon or agree with. I mean, you know, that's just the way that it is. But the poor guy, no matter what he does, David, he is going to be in trouble with somebody. I mean, think about it. Here we have a president that was elected on certain promises, and he's keeping his promises, and people are griping about it. You know, he must just be throwing his hands up in the air. Although, to be honest with you, I don't think that Donald Trump cares. He knows what his mission is, and he's fulfilling that mission. And Sally Yates had the responsibility to uphold the law of the land. That was the law of the land at that particular point as it related to immigration. And I'll tell you what really, really concerned me, Dave, is when crybaby Schumer, Chuck Schumer, stood up and said that Sally Yates was a profile in courage. You're not a profile in courage when you break the law.
She's a profile, Gary, in lawlessness is what she is.
Well, that's just exactly it. And that shows me the thought process of the likes of Chuck Schumer and others. You know, one of the problems that we're going to have to deal with, I feel, as we go into this next administration, is that under the Obama administration, over the last 8 years, we have gotten away from the rule of law, and we've stretched this and we've stretched that to the point that we've come to the place that whenever a person such as Donald Trump wants to maintain the law, number one, it's not going to be recognized by many, and number two, people are going to say, well, that's strange. You know, just like the children of Israel, was it back in the book of Hosea? It says that God spoke to them the things of the law, but it was strange to them because they didn't comprehend it. And I think that that's where we are in the American legal system today, and even in the Department of Justice. And I'm glad that Donald Trump fired Sally Yates. I think it sets a precedent. It will set a precedent. And I think it's sending a message to everybody else. You better be careful. We better follow the law or else.
Well, Gary, while we're talking about you know, the Obama administration, what did you think about what former President Obama did? He could only withstand the temptation to do this for 10 days, and then he did as he said he would do if he felt that fundamental American values were being violated. This is not a violation of fundamental American values at all, this immigration and refugee executive order. But he sprang off the bench, as he said he would do, and had to enter into the middle of the fray. Gary, do you feel like I do? During his time as president, he played golf incessantly. And now it seems since he's left the White House, you can't get him out on the golf course. Could I make a suggestion to our former president? Why don't you mount your golf cart, and why don't you get your clubs, and why don't you drive not slowly into the sunset? Why don't you push the pedal to the floor and rapidly ride into the sunset and spend your time playing golf now that you're out of the White House, because you did virtually nothing productive while you were in the White House?
Maybe we could raise some money to buy him a new set of golf clubs now that he's out of the White House. I don't know.
Well, you know, there are some that said they don't want him playing on that one golf course outside Washington, D.C., so maybe we could go together and buy him a membership. What do you think, Gary?
But, you know, he wants, again,
this is absurd.
It is absurd, and it's breaking the precedent of former presidents. Former presidents have always given those who have followed them in the White House the opportunity to establish their government and to establish their course of governance. And, you know, Barack Obama promised us, David, that he was not going to do that. And he certainly isn't going to do that. But here again, I don't think that it affects Donald Trump at all. I don't think that he cares what Barack Obama says. He's going to go ahead and do what he thinks is right, no matter what. But I think what is going to happen is that with the likes of Barack Obama standing up and speaking out, and with the likes of Chuck Schumer, what we are going to find, David, is a sowing of discord amongst those who are in Washington, D.C., that it will, in time, make it very difficult, number one, to have a united America, and number two, to govern according to constitutional law. And I think that that's what we as Americans need to pray about.
Well, Gary, you are, again, are reading my mind or reading my mail or a combination of both. I agree with you, Gary. I think there is a concerted effort on the part of the Chuck Schumers and on the part of the Barack Obamas, on the part of the Hillary Clintons and host of others I could name, to sow discord in the United States of America to make it virtually impossible for the Trump administration to succeed. And I think all that we're seeing across the United States of America is further implementation of professional protesters to try to sow discord, sow seeds of discontent, sow seeds even of anarchy in the United States of America to stop what our present president is doing. Gary, you know as well as I do, and I want you to pray about this as we wrap up the program today. You know those leftists, those liberals, those Islamists, and a host of other ists that I could name that have made great gains over the last 8 years. They are not going to surrender these easily, if at all. And so what we're watching is them crusading to keep the ground they've gained, even as they watch it slipping away from them. So, Gary, would you take us to God's throne of grace for God's protection on our president, the administration, God's wisdom, and God's direction in the days ahead, specifically over tonight's announcement?
Yes, indeed, Dave, I will. Father in heaven, as we come to you, we thank you for the privilege of prayer and for the opportunity that we have to come boldly before your throne of grace. And Lord, we have gone through an 8-year period of anti-law in a great many ways. It is my prayer, dear Lord, that you would guide, our current president and those around him to make decisions that are based upon the Constitution that will strengthen the United States of America, not only constitutionally, but biblically. Lord, we have prayed for a long time that you would put somebody in the White House who could lead us to constitutional law as well as biblical law, that is, to bring us to revival in this nation. And it could very well be that the current administration may be your person to do that, your people to do that. And so, Lord, it is my prayer that you will give them the wisdom, the strength, the protection, and the care, the guidance to do what they can do to make America great again from the biblical and the constitutional perspective. And we'll give you the praise for it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Well, friends, I hope the program today has been beneficial to you. And I want to encourage you tonight at 8 o'clock, tune into your favorite news channel and watch the president's address that will no doubt come from the East Room of the White House, most likely as he makes his Supreme Court pick known. And then tune in tomorrow for what I am sure will be in-depth analysis of that pick on Stand in the Gap today. Until then, have a blessed afternoon.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Live from beautiful West Norriton Township, this is AM.